University of Maryland charges each student undergraduate $400 a year to subsidize the football program, even though the football program brings in television revenue, gate receipts, and so on. And they do it because they can get away with it.
Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie with Reason TV, and today we're talking with Greg Easterbrook. He is the author, most recently, of The King of Sports, Football's Impact on America. Greg, thanks for joining us.
Nick, glad to be here.
This is a book that is both critical, but also very praising of football and its general impact and influence on American culture. We'll get to the positives in a minute, but what I want to talk about first is about how taxpayers support college and pro football, whether or not they ever buy a ticket or go to a game. You write, the $29 million Rutgers tuition subsidy for athletics worked out to nearly $1,000 per student. In-state tuition that year, Rutgers is a public university, was $12,754, meaning that 8% of tuition charges paid by parents actually were charges for NCAA athletics. And now, talk a bit about that. How does this happen? Because everybody is bitching and moaning about college prices going up, and yet, as you document in here, and it's not just Rutgers, even powerhouses like Florida, they are sucking money out of the general fund for a college or university to go to it. How does this happen?
A lot of what's wrong with the way the financial structure of American life is happens because people can get away with it, and schools do this because they can get away with it. We're doing this interview about 10 miles from College Park, where University of Maryland has a powerhouse football program. University of Maryland charges each student undergraduate $400 a year to subsidize the football program, even though the football program brings in television revenue, gate receipts, and so on. And they do it because they can get away with it. I think parents who pay most college bills largely don't know this is happening. The $400 is buried in mysterious asterisks on your tuition bill. But there are only half a dozen big college programs in the whole country that are not actively subsidized by their universities, even though they're clearing $30 to $40 million a year in profit after paying all salaries and expenses.
Do you think this is a question of if this was publicized more? Because you hear a lot a kind of general bromide of people saying, well, you know, at these big schools, at least the football and basketball programs make money and they subsidize, you know, English or the fine arts, when in fact, as you were saying, that's just not true. Is it a question of people understanding this and then pushing back against it?
Yeah, and it's not true. You mentioned the University of Florida, which is a nice public university and also a good athletic school. University of Florida, the football program draws $1 to $5 million a year in direct subsidies from the academic mission of the school. They're basically, what they're doing is that they're leasing the University of Florida's traditions, their colors, and their tax exemptions to run a very small not-for-profit business that pays its executives quite well.
And as you point out, I mean, generally, particularly at the bigger football factories, I mean, there's a couple of exceptions, but generally, not only that, but the football players actually graduate at much lower rates than the student body.
Well, that's a separate issue, but that's my big concern. I'll finish up the last one just by saying there are only half a dozen programs in Division I, despite the huge increase in revenue, that actually pay their own way. Ohio State does, University of Oklahoma, University of Texas, a few do, but most do not. Most are actively harming the academic finances of their institutions. Now, should college football players be paid? Some people think so. I don't think so. We could talk about that. I think the big scandal of college football is that 55% of Division I players graduate. That's an outrage. The value of a college diploma is greater economically. It's about $1 million to your lifetime earnings. It's greater than the players could be paid under any possible scheme.
What percentage of college scholarship players go on to play in the NFL? It's 1% or something?
1 in 30 ever receive an NFL paycheck because of scholarship players. And 1 in 100 stay in the NFL long enough to have anything resembling a career. So if they're all going on to huge bonus checks, this wouldn't matter, but they're not going on to huge bonus checks. As I say in King of Sports, they're being used up and thrown away.
Now, let's talk about how this plays out in the NFL, which, again, is a league that is almost all of the owners are, if not 100 millionaires, they're billionaires. And yet you write that 87% of stadia capital financing comes out of taxpayers' dollars. How is this happening?
Well, again, I think it's just because owners are able to bully legislatures and get away with it. If you were, city councils or state legislatures tend to make these decisions, and funding an NFL stadium, say that $500 million that Minnesota just gave to fund the new stadium for the Minnesota Vikings, enables you to make a dramatic announcement. There'll be thousands of new jobs and huge economic activity and tourism, and you know you're going to be retired before the bills for those bonds comes due anyway. On the other hand, if you went to the mat with an NFL owner and he did move his team, I don't think this is likely, but suppose it happened, you would be blamed and you would immediately be voted out of office.
Is there any reason to believe when either politicians or boosters or team owners say, look, if we put a stadium in here, it's really going to jack up the local economy? Is that true?
I wish it were true. Studies show that the stadium spending does have a little bit of effect on the local economy, but nothing proportionate to the cost. It has a very little multiplier effect. If you're building roads or bridges, those things have economic multiplier effects. Spending on stadiums really only produces economic activity 10 days of the year in the NFL, and it's just not enough to be noticeable.
The ownership structure of the NFL, they're arch-capitalists in one way, but
yes,
in another way, they're also socialists, because the revenue sharing has allowed for parity in the league, which creates better competition.
Yeah, I think revenue sharing is a great idea in the NFL. One reason the games are consistently good is the Jacksonville Jaguars have just as much money to work with as the Dallas Cowboys. So it results in good competition. The Jacksonville's not good this particular
right.
year, but overall it means good competition. So this is one of the ways in which football, I think, sinks American culture. Everybody in football talks rock-ribbed conservatism, self-reliance, and then their economic structure is subsidies and guaranteed benefits. Isn't that America? We all want to talk about it. We're rock-ribbed, self-reliant, and where's my benefits? I mean, football is structured that way.
And as a final note, as long as we're talking about the NFL ownership structure, talk a bit about the nonprofit status, how that plays into this whole kind of ability to, on the one hand, talk about being self-reliant, and on another hand, get as much out of the public till as possible.
By act of Congress, 1966, NFL headquarters, not the individual teams,
right.
but NFL headquarters is chartered as a not-for-profit. They don't pay any federal or state, actually, income taxes. And Roger Goodell, the commissioner, paid himself $30 million in the most recent year. On paper, he appears to be running a public-spirited charity, and paying himself $30 million a year is an outrage.
Can you quote the actual tax law that was amended to include and the NFL?
It was a classic example of the lobbyist art. In 1966, when a piece of legislation full of little sweeteners for the NFL was passing, a lobbyist got the words, and professional football leagues, slipped into the legal definition of a not-for-profit. So that great humanitarian, that philanthropic benefactor, Roger Goodell, now runs a not-for-profit.
Final question. There's been a lot of talk recently about how football, because of brain injuries, concussions at all levels, but then it leads to, finally at the top of the pyramid, you have people like Junior Seau and other great players who have committed suicide. And people are starting to say, well, it's because their brains have been banged up by playing football. Do you think football, does this pose a serious risk to the long-term future of football? Are people going to say, look, this is a blood sport and we've got to get rid of it?
Oh, I think it's a huge risk to football. It's not the only dangerous sport. The rates of concussion per hour of play in soccer and football are relatively similar. But because so many more people are involved in playing football, if you're asking what sport does the most health damage, it's got to be football.
Mm-hmm.
And unless the sport is made more safe, I think it is a long-term threat to the game, yes.
We will leave it there. The book is The King of Sports, Football's Impact on America. The author is Greg Easterbrook. Thanks for talking with
Thank
Reason
you,
TV. For Reason TV, I'm Nick Gillespie.